Assalamu alaikum. Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Media Ta'meen, for allowing me to conduct the second session of the Enterprise Risk Management and Insurance Markets session, or course, we could say. This is Sarah Abdulaziz speaking to you. Thank you, everyone, for your correspondence and the questions that has been asked and raised to basically enlighten everyone's knowledge. I hope that I have done an okay job, not even an excellent job, but I'm hoping that whatever was cascaded down to you guys in the previous session or voice message was truly beneficial to your area, or you could have gained some information that could be applied into your day-to-day businesses, or at least that's your knowledge. Thank you so much again. And we're going to go ahead and start our second session of the enterprise risk management and insurance industry. And that's when we are going to go through the following. So agenda number one is a quick review of what we have spoken about in terms of a very high level. Let's say review of the last session, only so we could establish that connection between what was said before and what are we going to bring this way. And the rest of the agenda for today is going to hold the regulatory expectations within the risk environment and the insurance companies, the accountabilities and responsibilities when it comes to the three lines of defenses against the risk responsibilities. So how to cascade down the tone that risk is trying to establish within the three lines of defense and what every responsibilities falls within each line. All right. And then the third area we're going to discuss is the enterprise risk assessments, the universe of risks that we need to count for in an insurance industry, basically. So the categories of risk that we should never drop in general as best practices. And then we're going to go through the risks that has been cascaded down through our regulator, SAMA, to oversee and report and basically monitor, which is listed under their regulations, under the risk regulations, as a reference. And then we're going to talk about an example of risk that we're going to go through and filter it down in the evaluation criteria, where we mentioned the likelihood criteria, the severity criteria, and the control effectiveness criteria, and how does the risk rating process starts and ends, and what does that mean in terms of tools in the risk department, what reporting can we use to basically reflect the statuses and the mitigations and so on for businesses and board committees and whatever type of reportings to showcase the status of risk management within a company. So allow me now to start with a quick revamp. Well, we said in the last session, we talked about the definition of risk, and that's how risk is not all about minimizing and eliminating the risks. It's also a good thing that risk could be a beneficial to a company, and that the reward is always there when you take higher risks. The real key is basically to just manage the risks. We've spoken that the way to manage risks are through implementing an ERM, which is an enterprise risk management framework within a company. And that way, you know that whatever risks facing you are categorized and you know what's their status. Are they worthy of being paying attention to, or are they on the bottom of the triangle? So the way to do that is basically to ask yourself the three questions we've agreed on, which is, are we taking the right risks? Are we taking the right amount of risks? And do we have in-house the right processes to manage these risks? We've also discussed the way to cascade down these three messages into numeratic way and a way that we could actually quantify and start almost assessing these risks where we could take and drive business decisions. And that is done through asking the three questions. However, if we translate it down in a way that could give us results, then we're asking about the impact, the likelihood, and the risk control. And that's the way to basically filter down these risks through these three filters. And whatever results and rating we're going to get is the risk grade, either high, low, medium, or very high, or maybe even a showstopper. Now, we've spoken also about the misconceptions that could be taken about the enterprise risk management and the false statements that we have discussed, where that the risk management is all about risk elimination, where we said it's false. We've also spoke about that a separate risk management department does not own the entity's risks. Ownership stays within the area of the risk. Also, we've spoken about that the risk management is not a replacement of internal controls, and it could be taken as additional work and extra business processes. However, we know that that is only to make sure that conduct of business has continuity and to provide assurance to the board and to the regulator that whatever appearing risks or emerging risks within the company and the market is being taken care of and probably managed, and action plans are being provided to be mitigated. Now, for our section today, we're going to start with discussing the regulatory expectation. Now, as many of us may know or not know, because that depends on where are you within the organization, not everyone had the opportunity or chance to work on the framework. However, it's definitely worth being mentioned. Now, the regulatory expectations when it comes to the risk areas and the growth that they're trying to basically embed in the market and the knowledge and the oversight and the mentality and the awareness of all related businesses and institutes and basically market activities regarding insurance, they're all voicing down the importance of having such a residual or very controlled entities or businesses or practices. Now, controlled, not in a way where it's really puppet doll type of controlled. No, they're speaking more of how transparent and how consistent and how easy to be identified and the intervention of it, the culture of the risk management and the oversight and the elevation of insurance company risks in general to be appearing and cascaded down. Now, you could almost relate to the SAMA risk-based supervision framework that they have sent out early 2016, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, sorry, 17, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I think it's 17. Anyways. So it's a framework where SAMA have asked all businesses to clear out some of their practices and basically voice it in a way to answer a question. They've provided 10 tabs, and in each tab they had a certain type of risk that they wanted us to, as businesses, they wanted us to basically supervise and declare our statuses against. We almost seen the framework, and the result of that framework is basically for businesses to clear out what are their statuses against these questions asked regarding these risks identified, and then basically framing all of these declarations by evidences, if it's existence. If it's not existent, then by action plans to be remediated, because it's an implemented framework. It needs to be eventually implemented within all insurance companies. Now, what's the benefits of such a thing? I myself think it's very beneficial because you can almost see how solid your company is when it comes to the risk governance, their duties when it comes to board and board committees. You could see and test out your real status in a company where you actually can, if you have never had a risk management department, you could almost find out what your status is when it comes to these type of risks and how are you performing against them and what are the expectations from SAMA against each one of them by answering questions. So it's definitely a challenging project to have and adopt. A lot of companies have outsourced the project, or a lot of companies did not even have an in-house risk department where they have outsourced the whole practice. However, that framework be implemented on all insurance companies, it could only reiterate one thing, that the regulator is trying their best to elevate the quality of risk management and to basically cascade down that the mentality of adopting risk cultures within all three lines is very important, and it's what's gonna bring this market to a status where it's prudent and it's efficient, and people can be actually people could actually be consistent in the way that they're providing information and in the way that they're basically taking in requirements and confirmation and information from the market. So a two-way communication, consistency and transparency of information is very important. And we know that we are only trying to mitigate and control, and I'm assuming the controllers and regulators are trying to make the same tone cascaded down to business insurances, only because we're trying to take a good exposure within the insurance markets a whole, not only within Saudi Arabia. And the only way to do that is by gaining best practices and showing off how resilient our market is. So we're all responsible of basically embedding these type of tones that are being cascaded from our regulator. Not to talk too much about this point, but the regulatory expectations of the overall is oversight. They're trying to embed the oversight is going to be done through the three lines of defense model, which looks to manage and mitigate risks through the effective organization of risk. So they're trying to effectively organize the risks and then control and oversight the responsibilities that will limit the possibility of gaps. And that would serve us as well in avoiding the duplication of coverage. Let me explain that. So, as I said again, the three lines of defense model looks to manage and mitigate the risk through an effective organization of risk. So they're trying to basically say that if you lay down three lines of defenses within each organization, if all organizations applies the same thing, you're gonna effectively organize your risks and the way to mitigate them. You're also gonna gain a control and oversight responsibility that could never be skipped or missed up. And you will also limit the possibilities of gaps not being identified, because now if a ball crosses the first line of defense, then the second line of defense is responsible of catching it. If second line of defense doesn't, then our third line of defense, which is our assurance team, the internal audits, are able to catch that gap. So by walking through steps and filtering the risks through steps different tests, different type of tests, different severity of tests, different scopes coming in within a practice is what's going to provide us with a more resilient and definitely a framework that sets the expectations exactly as cascaded by our regulator. Not only that, it's going to elevate the health of the internal environment of a company, but it's always going to put you in the market for being a competitive market that is resilient, and it's going to basically assure its consistency and existence in a market. Because we all know that some of the risks, if they're not mitigated, you are threatened to be excluded out of a market if you end up with a regulatory fine, or if you end up with a risk that you have you haven't counted for, and let's say insolvency, or if you dealt with a party that you basically didn't have the controls to know that you shouldn't deal with such a party. So it's really important for us to know what is expected in order to deliver. And now we know that the expectation from the market is for all insurance companies to basically build that oversight and adopt a healthy risk-based culture within organizations. And as I said, the benefit of having the three lines of defense model will basically make the company manage and mitigate its risk through an effective organization. And then the second thing would be the control and oversight of responsibilities and the limits of these responsibilities. Also, it's gonna definitely draw the gaps and identify the gaps in an easier way, because now we're avoiding duplicates of coverage. I could be covering an area of risk, and my teammate could be covering the same area of risk, and another colleague in another department could be covering the same type of risk. However, it's only the same category type of risk. So we could all be overseeing or noticing or identifying gaps within financial aspects. But okay, who is identifying gaps within the strategic? Who is identifying gaps within the operational side or regulatory side? And if so, what does it mean if the second level of that risk that we have identified is correlated to another area? So how are we making sure that not only we are identifying the risks, but we're actually catching the whole thread from beginning to end? And that could only happen within the protocol of three line of defense, respecting and actually applying the three lines of defense is what's going to allow us to do so. Now, to go through the three lines of defense model, it's a model that basically says there is a first line of defense, second line of defense, third line of defense, and they're all aiming to basically they're aiming to make the risk cycle a better cycle to deal with. Now, there are responsibilities within each line of defense. To start off, let me say each line of defense and who actually sits within. First line of defense is usually our operational and operational team in general. So just to give examples, or to basically summarize all the examples, any department that you think of that is handling money, so they're basically in a direct contact of profit or losses, and any department that is client-facing, to summarize it, any department that is client-facing as well, could be considered as first line of defense. So let's say sales and marketing, they face clients, they provide targets, they have to achieve targets, so that means that they are first line of defense. Another example could be customer experience. They are facing clients. They are talking to clients over the phone. They are conducting a whole cycle of investigation when it comes to a complaint or whatever. So we could count them as well as first line of defense. Now, in insurance industries, it's a bit different because not unlike banking, you have people who are working within a certain level of operations, and then you have the risk stewards, which is where technical people are working. And technical people are considered first line of defense. So the technical team or department where actuaries, underwriters, reinsurance, investment, and claims is also a support, they might not be as direct contact or exposed to the market or client facing, but they are in the end of way. So the technical department in insurance companies is definitely counted as the operations as well. So they are first line of defense. The second line of defense is where the support comes. So second line of defense contains the risk and the compliance. For risk and compliance, they're all control and support functions. Control and support functions, meaning that they provide support, they establish and translate the tone cascaded by boards and our committees down to basically initiatives and strategies and ways to conduct business, and monitor that through within the business itself, so we could assure that the same tone is being felt through within the organization. So I'm pretty sure that we have a lot of senior managers in here and department heads. A lot of time when we sit in board committees and the board goes, let's try a very aggressive approach this year because we are trying to provide market share. Our goal this year is market share. So let's go very aggressive. We're not looking for profits as much as market share. So the underwriting manager or head would definitely start taking the aggressive approach. However, him being at the first line, he might not have the overall vision of what could offset what if such a thing happened. So whatever he's going to propose has to come back to the standard that was established by risk, which is usually a risk strategy. And that risk strategy is where the CRO, let's say, have cascaded down and broke down the board words into thresholds or limitations and precautionary guidelines, where when the first line of defense, which in this example is the head of underwriting, comes to control CRO risk to basically discuss their approach that they have heard, but maybe not have applied. So now it's time for risk to challenge business and make sure that there is no gaps. And if there are any, how to identify them, how to cure them, how to mitigate them, how to bring them to an acceptable level. Do we need, if you're proposing that taking, let's say, cargo as an underwriting line because it's very aggressive, if you're taking it into account, then what are the exposed areas that we have to cover in order to mitigate the left out risk? So now the underwriting head knows that not only I have to propose an aggressive action plan, an aggressive approach, but I have to propose a remediation or worst case scenario type of a proposal, where maybe one of the controls that he could make is contacting the reinsurance company and proposing the profile again and reviewing the controls and processes, maybe running dry scenarios about the underwriting profile that he's trying to create. Anyways, so in that, and that is how a second line could be the support. Now, a lot of people confuse between what kind of support could be provided by risk and what kind of support could be provided by compliance. Compliance and risk oversee a lot of similar close areas. However, they have their different, they have their own regulations, and we do follow our own regulations. They have their own responsibilities, and we do have our own responsibilities as well. Usually, in risk, it's key indicators and emerging risks that we're trying to avoid, and usually we have an acceptable level, we have a tolerance level, and you have a ceding level where you don't want to go over. And we have that option. We are trying to find the balance between what's amber, red, and green. What's the balance? That's where risk do their mitigation. However, the nature of risks identified within compliance is usually black and yellow. You're either compliant or not compliant. You're either in breach or not in breach. You're either fined or not fined. Basically, what I'm trying to say here is that the compliance area is very regulator-driven area where there is no tolerance of such activities at all. You could simply be taken as, your status could be taken as in breach in any second. So it's definitely one of the most high areas that business should focus on and definitely provide support and continuous monitoring over. However, overall, risk oversees all company risks, and that includes the regulatory risk, that includes the financial risk, that includes the underwriting risk, that includes the operational risk, and that includes the strategic risk as well. So these five umbrellas are the umbrellas or the universes that risk oversee. Only because compliance is a control and a separate function, that means that they are this much of support needed. But they don't replace risk, and risk does not replace compliance as well. They monitor things within more effective area. They have day-to-day things to process and map and clear out. That's why they are a separate function. Their nature of work is definitely different. While risk oversee all type of risks, they're trying to focus on the company status not being in breach of the regulator, the regulation. Now, the third line of defense is basically internal controls. Internal auditors. Internal auditors are our risk checkers, our compliance checkers, our strategy checkers, our assurance in general. So they retest whatever was tested by control functions and confirm. And they retest whatever was applied and suggested to the businesses and confirm. And if those two goes well, you get your rating as you satisfy all the requirements of mitigating the risks and covering your department from any regulatory breaches or requirements. If not, then they are responsible of raising these concerns to the departments for them to action on and continuously monitoring that through every cycle of internal audits they conduct. And basically that's how the three line of defense is applied within a company. You need to understand where are you placed within. So if you are risk and compliance, you are support. If you are governance, you could be considered as support function, so second line. If you're talking about first line activities where we're facing clients or dealing with money, monetary, then you are a first line of support, of defense. If you are in the internal control, internal audit team, then you are a third line of defense. Moving on from that point, there are certain, how can I say this? There is certain outcomes that risk produces, like the risk strategy, the risk policy, the risk appetite, the risk tolerance levels, the risk identification process, the risk assessment process, the filters itself, the thresholds that they have to be set on these assessments, and then the loss and incident reporting, the infrastructure, all of these areas or results are result of the work of a risk department. So if anyone asks what type of outcome does the risk department produce, then these are the stuff. Now, each line of defense have different responsibility to each one of these outcomes. And that's where the alignment and the knowledge and the support could be the maker or the breaker of the enterprise risk management. Let me give you an example. So, risk tolerance level is one of the things that risk produces. Risk tolerance levels is where I'm saying, okay, I could definitely have two apples, but if you push me to my max, I could definitely maybe do four, but if I do anything after that, I'm just gonna get apple poisoning, which doesn't exist, but apple poisoning for the sake of the example. Now, people could respond to such a thing differently. Some people might choose to eat two apples because they know that that's the beginning of that's what satisfies them. So to break exactly where it's needed to be break. And some people could exceed. They go like, oh yeah, but the third apple sounds really nice. So I'm just going to take a bite. And they go for three apples. And some people might go like, why? My appetite is way bigger than four apples. Give me seven. And then he just chooses to disregard whatever was cascaded down by the risk. So if we apply this very, very, very high level and simple example to our entities, is basically when we gave the same example. So the tone from the top came to us saying, go aggressive. The underwriting team came to me saying, by the board wanting us to go aggressive, my approach is 1, 2, 3, 4. These are the lines that I'm trying to underwrite this time. This is the way that I'm going to underwrite them. For me, as risk, I have to validate whatever was produced by business in order to make sure that the tolerance level, the risk acceptance level, and the appetite set is in line with whatever the board members cascaded. So I need to be almost the person who's an interpreter between two bodies, the board, which is the tone from the top, and the end line where it's business and now it's for them to actually start conducting the tone and cascaded it down to an actual business. So the first line responsibility when risk tolerance levels is produced, the first line responsibility is for the owners within the first line to comply with the limits. So if risk says, okay, you've told me, they told me, now what I think it's proper is this. Is it approved? Now it got approved. Now we have it for us to actually start doing business over. Okay. Head of underwriting decides to overwrite over the tolerance or under the tolerance or too consistent within the aim or the target, that is the responsibility of first line of the first line of defense, the head of underwriting. He or she needs to comply with the limits. That's the only responsibility they have to pay out in order to make sure that the risk tolerance levels are maintained in a healthy status. Now, the second line of defense, which is us as risk or compliance, responsibility goes to review and update and provide recommendations. So we're only giving support. I will review whatever the performance of these activities could be in a monthly, quarterly, half-yearly basis. So I'm reviewing to make sure that the business is complying with their limits. And then I will update and provide recommendations if I see a swiver in the movement from right to left, from up to down. So if they're going away, I'll make sure to recommend something to bring them back to path to green. All right. And then the third line, which is the internal audit function, their responsibility falls on providing independent reviews and assurance on the adequacy of and the appropriateness of the practice. So it's almost like if I gave confirmations and recommendations to the intern, to the head of business, or sorry, the business line, where in this example is the underwriting head, then third line, the internal controls, are giving independent. So I gave my opinion, but they gave an independent review and assurance on the adequacy of whatever we're doing, support and business. So they are independently giving us that assurance and making sure that we're adequate and appropriately following through. So that was one of the examples where an outcome is provided by the risk, which is needed to be there to implement the enterprise risk management, like the risk strategy, the risk policy, appetite, tolerance, identification, registers, loss incidence reporting. All of these are requirements to basically say, yes, I have a resilient risk department. In order for these things to be applied, each line of defense, again, I reiterate, each line of defense has responsibilities, certain responsibilities. If it's about the tolerance, first line needs to comply with the limits. Second line needs to make sure that they are staying within the limits. Third line, they give a separate assurance that this is happening exactly how it's supposed to. Now, some people could ask me, where does the board fall out of the three line of defense? Well, the board are definitely the tone at the top, and they're one of the stakeholders of the company. So when we're talking about the board, we're almost saying that we just need the review and the endorsement and the support. And when I say review, that means the review of the outcomes I'm producing, the review of the performance that is being done, the endorsement of some of the approvals or requirements or opinions or suggestions that's being made. So their existence is very important, and it's definitely not swooped in. It's more, it has to be clear, it has to be voiced out, it has to be consistent, and it has to be transparent as well and tested. The most important thing is for it to be tested. All right. So we've spoken now about the accountability, and we've also spoken about, okay, now we could talk about the risk universes, where we said that there is five types of risk that needs to be mitigated within the companies in general, the insurance companies, sorry. We have the strategic risk, the underwriting risk, the operational risk, financial risk, and compliance risk. In the compliance risk, we're trying to mitigate and find out the areas of risks under three sub-areas, which is code of conduct, the legal area, and the regulatory area. On the strategic risk, we are trying to find out stuff that are related to the performance and what could really make the company stands out in terms of applying their mission, value, and targets for a year. So that's strategic. Strategic could contain the market dynamics, the country dynamics, business continuity, business innovations, planning and resourcing, the corporate governance, outsourcing, the products, the catastrophic events that could apply on a company. Now, on the underwriting risks, is very important. Usually in other markets, if you apply a risk universe, you don't really count for underwriting risk. Underwriting risk only exists within insurance companies, and that's why it's worthy to being considered under the monitoring umbrellas. Now, the underwriting risk could hold reserving, the underwriting processes, the pricing and the problems that could happen, the reinsurance, and again, the products as well, because, you know, you never know about the products that you're writing off. And also the reinsurance, as we said, yes. We did say insurance. All right. And then on the operational risk, we're talking about the reporting and the disclosures, the consistency of the information provided, and how reactive it could be is very important. The information technology and solutions and failures and all the risks that comes with that from cybers and you go on. And then we have also the people and human resources risk. We have the reputational risk and its management, the sales and marketing as well, and the servicing. On the financial aspect or type of risk, we're talking about the markets risk, the capital structure, the solvency, the liquidity, the default risk, the credit risk, the counterparty risk. All these are type of risks in best practices are overseen definitely by the market and etc. Now in SAMA, they do have certain types of risks that they do stress about. All of these risks can be provided to you if you read the risk regulations. They do have these subjects discussed and they do have these areas. Allow me not to mention it in this recording, however, I could provide you with the list just as subtitles for you to review. However, the best thing for yourself right now is to actually, if you're interested, I mean, is to read the regulation, the SAMA regulations on risk management for insurance companies. Now, I feel like I have over exceeded my time, so I'm only going to propose to leave the evaluation criterias and the assessments and how is that reflective into the reporting phase into a third lecture. This is already almost 45 minutes now with my closing lecture. But I'll be more than happy to conduct the third one. I'll discuss that on a separate note with Media Ta'min and confirm again. If not, then I'll be more than happy to share the material that I have sketched down for you guys to basically take the best value given. Thank you so much, guys, again, and I appreciate all your efforts and hard work. This is Sara Abdulaziz. Greetings and thank you so much. Good night.